Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we're going to talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robbie, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today we're going to talk about Rocky Marciano's family not too pleased with Floyd Mayweather. And I'm sure that Mayweather Sr. calling Marciano a bum doesn't really help things.
No.
The big fight finally here. Will Mayweather go 49-0?
Unfortunately, yes.
Our history lesson today goes deep. Robbie, we're going deep. November 12, 1982, Aaron Pryor versus Alexis Arguello in the Orange Bowl.
And yeah, that was a heck of a fight.
Yeah, it sure was, man.
And if you're an Alexis Arguello fan, today is your day. Last week it was Pernell Whitaker's
day.
That's right. Today's Alexis Arguello day.
The Arguello show today.
Yeah.
We get started first with PBC on CBS.
Right.
All right, let's talk about the fight of the weekend, I think, in my opinion anyway. WBA regular bantamweight world champion Jamie McDonald scored a 12-round unanimous decision, a cakewalk, over Tomoki El Mexicanito Kameda, which I love because this guy, he's Japanese and he speaks fluent Spanish. It's so beautiful to watch. It's like it's just like a mind, you know, it's like what in the world is going on? You look at him and you're like, I can't believe this guy speaks fluent Spanish. It does anyway.
Yep. But he's lived in Mexico ever since he was 15 years old.
So. Yeah, it's awesome, man.
Yeah.
McDonald retained his title with a unanimous decision of 116-111, 115-112, 117-110. The one thing that I noticed in this fight that McDonald did differently than he did in the first fight, and I noticed it right in the first round, is he stood straight up and he fought a lot taller than he did. He kind of imposed his size in that first round. However, me, Kameda really caught up to him in the second, third, fourth, fifth. I mean, to me, I thought I had the fight 115, 113 because Kameda was knocked down in the final round. More of a, it wasn't a slip per se, but he was kind of his footing was off.
Well, he was on his way down and he got hit with a punch, so the referee had to call it a knockdown.
Right. You know, and I had it 115, 113 for Kameda. I had it 8 rounds to 4, but with the point deduction, it was 115, 113.
Yeah.
I was shocked when the scores were read. Tell me what you had and tell me what you thought of the fight.
I agree with you. I thought Kameda won at 115, 113. So I guess if I was going to agree with any of the judges' scorecards, I would agree with 115 to 112 for Kameda. But I don't know. Look, I have never been to a boxing match, and with my eyesight, I don't know if I'd get anything out of actually going to a fight.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know what the three judges see that the rest of us on TV, you know, see, because those of us that are watching on TV, we know by the end of the fight, by the end of this fight, well, okay, we know who won. This really drives me crazy about the sport that we talk about every week and we're supposed to love. How in the world can you score that fight 117, 110, 116, 111 for somebody that, if you looked at his face by the end of the night, it looked like he lost. I don't understand it, and no wonder why people who follow this sport, who are especially casual fans, no wonder why people are, well, this sport is, it's crooked, it's fixed, because when judges throw these kind of scorecards out, and the thing I also hate about judges is they're never called on the carpet for their scorecards. They're never asked to explain why they scored the fight the way that they scored it, because the media is not allowed to talk to the judges after fights. You can talk to the fighters. Well, you know that. You've covered fights. You can talk to the fighters and trainers and managers and stuff all you want, but you're never allowed to get an interview with a judge.
Right. I mean, when they do get interviewed, they're few and far between. They never really seem to get asked about specific fights, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is with this, I mean, and it's in Texas again, and I hate to keep picking on Texas.
Well, look, I can't blame this on Texas because
no.
I don't believe any of the judges were from Texas.
Right, right. You know, to me, like I said, man, the one, you know, he seemed to be using his height, McDonald I'm speaking of, seemed to be using his height, his range, his reach, but he was getting overwhelmed with shots. I mean, Kameda was far, you know, the busier fighter in this fight. I mean, by far. I mean, you know, he was landed more, he was throwing more. I just, the announcers, I mean, sure thought he won, that's for sure. I mean, it was very... To me, it was kind of pretty clear cut that he won the fight, you know, and I was kind of dumbfounded when I heard the scores. When I heard the scores, I was like, wow, he really, you know, they announced it for McDonald. I was like, what?
Look, I don't blame boxing fans for, you know, like, what's going on here? I mean, and the ironic thing about this, Eric, this is going to blow you away. I found out on Sunday, Jamie McDonald is not even signed to the PBC. He was brought in twice, so Kameda, who is signed to the PBC, could actually win a title. And I believe he won both fights.
I thought so, too, yeah.
Yeah. But McDonald said after the fight, that he is moving up to 122 because he can no longer maintain the 118 limit. So he'll be moving up with Leo Santa Cruz Ringing Diao and all those others at 122. So he said he's probably going to vacate his title. So maybe Kameda will finally get the title belt that he richly deserves. Because he's been robbed twice.
Yeah, that might be the third time as a charm for him because, I was shocked at those. And it's almost like, you know, you kind of, was it one of those fights where, you know, is it, do you like the boxer better than the guy who's throwing more punches? Is he landing the harder punches or the sharper punches? I didn't think so. I didn't think he was landing. Because a lot of times when you got a guy throwing that many shots, and, you know, but you got a power guy, so where every time he hits him, he's hurting him, then that's a different story. You can judge that a different way. But I didn't see that here. I just saw one guy, you know, really kind of taking him to task with a lot of shots.
Yep. Kameda got ripped off here twice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a good fight. It was a really good fight, good competitive fight.
Yeah,
but,
both of them were.
Yeah.
Both fights were. Both in May and here, and they both took place in Texas. So if I'm committed, the next time I'm offered a fight in Texas, I say, hell no, I ain't going.
I turn
you know?
It down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, man.
You know.
Yeah, that was a tough decision, man, and I was shocked. And like I said, man, I thought he won both fights also. First fight was a lot closer, but I thought he won at least 8 of those rounds.
And look, with McDonald being 5'10" at that weight, he's going to dominate 122 or 126 because there's nobody at those... There's nobody tall enough to really give him issues. What's he gonna be able to do against a guy like Ringin Diao, or what's he gonna do against a Donaire, or even Quigg or Frampton, any of those people? Because he's gonna be so much taller than the rest of those guys.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, if he does move up in weight and how that plays out. You know, and who he fights and kind of the style matchup, because I thought he did a good job early on, and he tried his best. Like I said, I mean, trying to use his range and trying to fight taller, trying to fight bigger, you know. But I think all the punches will nullify that, though. I mean, when you got guys throwing that many punches, when you're at that lighter weight like that, those guys are throwing constantly. I mean, it's, you know, Yeah.
I mean, hell, I never paid attention to it the first time, Eric. But when I seen it on the screen, 5'10", I said, "Is that a joke?"
Right.
You know. I mean, I couldn't believe that. You know. Good fight. Wrong person got the win. I mean, nothing against McDonald. He's a good fighter. Hopefully, he goes up to 122 and causes some issues up there for some of the fighters, and Kameda gets the title he richly deserves.
I tell you what, the matchmaking for PBC has been on point, man. I tell you, we've had some really good fights. Fights on the PBC.
It's ironic you say that, and then we have to talk about
Terrell.
we have to talk about one of the most disgusting main events that PBC has put on.
All right, let's talk about it. Former WBC champion, super middleweight main event, Anthony the Dog Durrell faced Marco Antonio Rubio. And Marco Antonio Rubio is actually my son's favorite fighter because his name is Antonio, and he heard Antonio on TV, and that really perked him up. This fight was very one-sided, man, very one-sided. I had it 100-90.
That's what it was.
Horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know. I mean, I understand why they put Rubio in there against Durrell. It's like kind of like a confidence fight and everything like that. But this was real bad.
Look, in my opinion, and this is for all boxing promoters and networks, when you have a card and you have a world title fight, any world title fight should be the card's main event. There is no business in a 168-pound super middleweight 10-round non-title fight being your main event. I don't care what kind of name you have. McDonald and Kameda deserve to be the PBC main event, and they deserve to get paid the PBC main event money. Durrell and Rubio should have been the very first fight of the day, because everybody could have got extra sleep and woke up when the fun really started. Okay,
That's an interesting point. That's a real interesting point, and that's what the UFC does also. And they said, and I remember back when they developed like their flyweight division and their bantamweight division and everything like that in the UFC.
Right.
That's what Dana White had said, that what we're going to do is, you know, they were like, well, can you really make main events out of this? Can this really headline a pay-per-view? And he said, well, it's going to. It's going to be, you know, if there's a title fight, that's the main event. You know, no matter what big name is on there, the title fight's always the main event.
Right. So I think next time you speak to your associate over there at the PBC, put that bug in their ear and make sure to pass along that all title fights, regardless of weight class, should be the PBC main event.
You know, and the thing is with Anthony Durrell, he's from Flint, Michigan, not Texas. So
yeah.
You think that, well, maybe because he was from, you know, maybe if he was, it was his hometown or something, I could see that because he's selling tickets and everything. But that wasn't his hometown at all. He couldn't have been further from his hometown, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Marco Antonio Rubio looked awful in this fight. It was a one-sided fight. He does. He absolutely does. I don't want to see him again. He just doesn't have it anymore. I mean, he looked horrible. I can't even.
Let's face it, folks. After you've been in the ring with the Ultimate Killer, your boxing career is over with after you suffer a severe beating, and that's what he.
That's
suffered.
What he did. That's what happened. Right.
Yeah. So, put him in the retirement home and move on. And Durrell needs to. God, I don't know what he needs to do, but that was an awful performance.
Now, what did you think of Durrell in there? I mean, you thought it was a bad performance by him?
Yeah. Well, because let's face it, Eric, Marco Antonio Rubio, the last time we seen him in the ring, he got put to sleep.
Right.
Again, this was a setup fight for the Durrell brother here to look impressive. And the way you're supposed to look impressive is you go in there and you do what Triple G did. You put this guy to sleep. He doesn't deserve to go 30 minutes with you.
Right.
You know, you're not going to raise your stock by having a having a 30-minute performance and carrying a dude that doesn't deserve to be carried. You're supposed to inflict punishment and put this guy out of his misery and prove to him that he no longer belongs in the sport of boxing. Marco Antonio Rubio is done, and Anthony the Dog Durrell did not do anything to make him realize that, which means Marco Antonio Rubio will probably get another date on PBC because Marco Antonio Durrell did not inflict a punishment that indicates that he shouldn't be fighting anymore.
I was surprised. I was surprised that Durrell couldn't put him away. That's the one thing, because, I mean, Rubio was slow. He was plodding. You could see his shots coming from a mile away. I was really surprised that Durrell really couldn't put him away. Nothing. I mean, Durrell looked like he bought. If you hadn't seen Durrell before, you know, when you saw this, you'd have been like, wow, he looks like a decent prospect. If you hadn't seen either one of these two guys before, you'd say, wow, he looks decent, you know. But, yeah, I mean, you know, even though he won 190 and he won every round, it was clear he won every round, I thought he should have got that guy out of there.
No, this was a setup to put this guy away, like, in the second or third round, kind of like Golovkin did.
Right.
You know, but unfortunately, the way the PBC works, Marco Antonio Rubio will be brought back, and somebody else will have to inflict the punishment that Durrell didn't do. And that was an awful main event. It did not deserve to be a main event.
No.
It almost reached the point where it shouldn't even have been on our TV. But anyway, that's just me.
I agree. I agree. It was a complete mismatch.
Yeah.
One of the funniest lines of the night was Gus Johnson, when they were talking about Floyd Mayweather. They were just kind of hyping the Mayweather fight for a minute or so, and they said Mayweather fights this weekend, and they looked at Virgil Hunter, and he says, "Who do you got in that fight?"
Oh, no, it wasn't Gus Johnson.
It was
Brian Kucher.
Was it Brian
Kucher?
Brian Kucher. Yeah.
I love that. Well, hey, and he already knew that Virgil Hunter was the trainer of Andre Berto, you know. You know, so yeah, I thought that was good. He's like, "Hey, I'm with Berto all day, man."
Right.
What do you expect him to say? Floyd's going to win. Yeah.
Well, that's what he said with Amir Khan. He said that Amir Khan is going to, you know, he trains Amir Khan, and he says, well, in order for Khan to beat him, he'd have to have the fight of his life and this and that, you know. Well, what do you think Berto's going to need, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Yeah. Well, Virgil, Andre, by the way, is getting paid $4 million for his beating that he's going to get on Saturday night, so... Floyd's getting 32 and Andre's getting 4.
Yeah, still a lot of money. It was actually talking about that night. It wasn't a good night for Kameda or his brother either. Apparently on the undercard, and we didn't see it, but I read about it. Victor Ruiz won an 8-round split decision over Daiki Kameda, Tomoki's older brother.
And there's three Kameda brothers fighting, and at one time they all held titles in the lower weight classes.
Wow.
And that's the first time in boxing history that three brothers held titles in any weight classes.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That is just insane.
Yeah.
Fighting family.
Yeah, and they all live in Mexico, and their Spanish is just, you know, what can you say?
Spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on, man. Spot
yeah.
on. Let's talk about the L.A. Fight Club that took place.
Okay.
Unbeaten featherweight Diego De La Hoya, who's now 12-0, won the vacant WBC youth title, whatever that is, via 10-round unanimous decision over former world title challenger Jesus Estrella Ruiz.
I think they just created this belt so they could
rank him or whatever. I mean,
because
I did hear, I've heard of the youth belt before, and it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
You know, I mean, when you think of youth belt, you think of, like, junior high or high school or something like that.
It's basically a confidence booster for a young prospect.
Right.
You know?
Right. But he won a unanimous decision 100-90 twice and 99-91 on the other scorecard.
Okay.
It was a pretty one-sided fight. You know, and this guy, the guy that he went up against had like, you know, he was 32-7 with 5 draws and 21 knockouts. So the guy had been around the block, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy had definitely been around the block. So, I mean, it was a good test for him. That's an experienced guy right there that you're going in against, you know, former world titleist and a former world title challenger. So yeah, I mean, that was a pretty big, what do you think of Diego?
I like Diego. I just hope Golden Boy gets their TV situation organized so we can actually see him on TV, because I've seen every one of his fights so far except for this one.
Yeah.
You know, congratulations to the god known as Al Haymon for getting the Fox spot, but Oscar needs to step up to the plate and make sure that English language speaking TV is available for us to see, so we can watch guys like Diego De La Hoya.
Right, and they're also streaming those fights, I believe, on the internet also.
On Ring TV.
Right, you can watch them on Ring TV, you can stream them. I don't know if there's a charge for it or whatever. I caught this one on YouTube.
I don't think there is. You'd have to go to their website and see, but I don't think there is.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, you can always see him. You can always see him on there if you can't find him on TV or whatever.
Right.
That's, you know. All right, let's talk about your man. Let's go, champ. Shannon Briggs fought this weekend. You know, this just blows my mind. WBO number 5 contender, number 5 ranked Shannon Briggs. He's number 5 in the WBO fighting these guys. Like Mike Marrone and that other guy that looked like somebody's grandfather last time in Argentina or wherever it was.
How in the hell can you be ranked when was the last time you were in the ring with a big name?
I have no idea. I'm ranked number 7 by the WBO. So I have no idea how the WBO ranks this guy number 5 for fighting guys like Mike Marrone. I mean, and I think it was Panama was his last fight prior to this.
Yeah.
Are you serious? How do you rank? He's not fighting anybody.
I mean, eventually, if this keeps up, he will get a mandatory shot with Klitschko. And you know what Klitschko does with mandatories? He never turns them down.
Right.
Which means we're going to see Shannon Briggs on US TV once again.
Unbelievable. It just blows my mind that he's ranked number 5. He won a second round knockout. Marrone was counted out at 252 of the second round with a body shot. It was a left hand to the body. You know, didn't look particularly debilitating, but, you know, it is what it is, you know, I guess.
You get paid a certain amount of money, you go to sleep, and you get paid for it. So.
Yeah, right. After the fight, of course, Briggs grabbed the mic and shouted, "Where's Klitschko? Let's go, champ. Let's go, champ." IBF, WBO, and WBA heavyweight champion Vladimir Klitschko did make an appearance earlier, but left the building before Briggs' fight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he left the building before the fight because nobody really wanted to see it anyway, you know. Apparently it was in Miami. And
right.
It was like Night of the Heavyweights or something like that, or Night of the
They had a heavyweight round table where fans could get autographs from several different heavyweights.
Michael Moore, Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, Klitschko, everybody was there. I mean, it was a huge. Larry Holmes, I think, was there. It was a huge to do.
Yeah.
And it was headlined, of course, by Shannon Briggs. Go figure that one out.
Yeah.
But it seemed like a pretty cool thing. So.
I've heard several good things about it. A lot of people in Florida have talked about that. So, yeah.
Yeah, but number 5 ranked contender. Can you justify that? Let me look at the rankings now.
Well, okay. Do me a favor. I don't know how difficult this is, but look on BoxRec and tell me the last time that Shannon Briggs was in the ring with a recognizable name. I think it's been, hell, at least a decade.
Let's see here.
You know.
The canon.
I want to say maybe 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. He was in there with a big name.
All right, let's see here. Mike Marone, you don't recognize that name. How about Zoltan Petriani? Do you remember that name?
No.
All right. Vitali Klitschko, 2010.
Okay, when was that?
2010. 10-16, 2010.
All right, so that we're going on 5 years.
5 years.
5 years, and he's been fighting, to quote some boxing fans, tomato cans.
So you don't think that Corey Phelps is a viable opponent?
No.
How about Richard Carmack?
No.
Matthew Greer?
No.
Lorenzo Smith?
No.
And prior to that, Sultan Abragimov, was in 2007. That was the only recognizable name prior to the 2010 fight.
And remember this, he did used to hold, believe it or not, a piece of the heavyweight title.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So you know, this guy's a pure idiot. I mean, again, I'm going to go back to this. You know, I don't. It does me no good, but I have to go back to this every single damn week. Guys over 40 shouldn't be fighting. Period.
Right.
Well, look, Vladimir Klitschko is 39 years old, but you know what? I don't have a problem with him fighting over 40. You know why? He doesn't get seriously hurt by anybody.
Right. And you know what the funny part is? If like you go to his website. And you go to, like, his Twitter account. It's like, it says Real Life Clubber Lang.
Cause he's always,
the one difference between him and Clubber Lang is, you know, the fictional Clubber Lang was good. I mean, the guy could fight. I mean, he was, you know, the man back then. This guy is a joke, you know. I mean, unbelievable. But, I mean, people love him, and people want to see this fight. I mean, people really want to see this fight. I think they actually think that Briggs... I don't know if they want to see the spectacle or they think Briggs actually has a shot in this fight.
Well, I'm a masochist, so I want to see the destruction. You know?
Right? You know?
Yeah.
Unbelievable, yeah.
I can't. God, look, I'm over 50, for God's sakes. Guys over 40 make me sick. They shouldn't be fighting. Period.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, and there's a few exceptions. Like I said, George Foreman and Bernard Hopkins kind of ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, and Vladimir Klitschko, the way he fights, he's not going to get hurt by anybody.
No.
I mean, we're going to talk about it later, but Tyson Fury's not going to hurt him.
No, you know? Not even close.
No. And we'll wait till we get to that story, folks.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
All right, so let's talk about the upcoming fights now this week. Now, we touched on this fight a little bit last week, but let's touch on it this week. Tomorrow, of course, we record the show on Monday. It's released on Wednesday, so Tuesday.
Right.
We'll miss – you got this fight will already have happened. But Austin Trout versus Joey Hernandez, 10 rounds, junior middleweights. And this is going to be on Fox Sports 1.
And that will be a 9 o'clock Eastern time start.
Right, Tuesday, September 8th.
Yeah.
And then – Jorge Lara versus Jesus Rojas, all 10 rounds, junior featherweights.
Okay.
All right. Now, Friday, September 11th, on Spike TV, the PBC on Spike from Toronto, Adonis Stevenson versus the powerhouse Tommy Carpensee.
Yep, he's the one that beat Chad Dawson, and we haven't seen Dawson back in the ring since.
There you go. 12 rounds, light heavyweight division for Stevenson's WBC title. Who do you like in this one?
Well, it's obvious. Adonis Stevenson.
Right. Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think there's anything Carpensee is... you know, and Adonis, you know, he's not... To me, he's not very impressive, you know? I mean, he's a decent fighter. He's not very impressive. He's not, like, overly, like, wow, I got to see this guy again.
Well,
you know
the sad part about it, I mean, Tommy's probably a decent guy, but he was... Again, I'm going to go back to this like we said earlier. Tommy Karpinski was brought into the PBC by Al Haymon or whoever to fight Chad Dawson to make Chad Dawson look good because it was supposed to be Chad Dawson and Adonis Stevenson in this fight.
Right.
But Karpinski messed that up, so now Karpinski gets that shot.
Good for him, man. Good for him, you know. He's going to make a little bit of a payday. But, yeah, I'm like you. I think Adonis walks this fight. I think it's a very easy fight for him.
And, come on, he's not losing in Canada, folks.
No. Now, the other one, this is a real intriguing fight to me, man. Errol Spence, the heir apparent, Errol Spence versus Chris Van Heerden, 10 rounds in the welterweight division. This is going to be interesting to me, man. Chris Van Heerden is no pushover. He's a very good fighter, and you know, a lot of people are writing him off because they don't know who he is, but he's a very, very good fighter. Errol Spence, though, I think should get him. Errol Spence is, of course, a former Olympian, kind of the heir apparent. This is the guy. To me, he's the next guy in the welterweight division.
Now, are you saying that because the ultimate warrior known as Floyd Mayweather christened him the next king, or?
No, I've been saying this for a while now. I've been saying this for a while that I think Errol Spence is the next guy.
Okay.
I think that, you know, I think that Keith Thurman is going to be one of those a good fighter that comes up, but I think ultimately Errol Spence is going to be the next. I don't know, and he's going to be a really good fighter. Now, whether he's going to be the next star, that I don't know.
Okay.
But he will be the next man in the welterweight division to beat.
Okay. All right. Well, I kind of have mixed feelings here.
Sure.
Because I've never seen Chris fight, but as I've mentioned on past shows, I did a two-hour interview with him. It was probably 2 or 3 years ago.
What a class guy, yeah. What a class guy to give you that much time.
When he was fighting in his native South Africa and he had the IBO title. Okay, he's actually, the IBO is not important to most of us, but he's not an up-and-comer. He's actually held a title belt.
Yeah.
So, granted, I don't know what kind of competition that he was dealing with in the place like South Africa, but I mean, to hold any kind of a belt, you have to know what you're doing. So, look, Earl is probably going to win, but I'm going to pick Earl to win, but I'm going to be rooting for the upset here because this guy is a class guy. Nobody knows who he is. I mean, I can't wait till the media starts getting to talk to this dude because he's one of the nine. I mean, to give you an idea, okay, my friend Billy, who does the Combat Sports Radio show.
Yeah, Bad Billy.
Yeah, Bad Billy.
Yeah, in a very good show, by the way.
He was talking to Chris's brother, Don Van Heerden, who fights in the EFC in South Africa. And Don, his brother, is the one that set it up for us to talk to Chris. And we actually called him at home, okay, in South Africa. We recorded the show in the middle of the night, so it was convenient for him.
Right.
So it would be during the day for him. And he gave us 2 solid hours.
That's amazing. What a class guy to do that and give you guys 2 hours of his time. It's amazing.
I mean, come on. For those of you that do other podcasts, because I know other people listen to this show, do you know a professional fighter that if you call them at their home, they're going to give you 2 hours of their time?
Right, right.
Maybe somebody that's retired who's not fighting anymore might do that. But somebody who's actually fighting, I mean, most of the interviews that are done on these kind of shows, what are they, 10 or 15 minutes?
Right. Oh, yeah, and they cut you off. I mean, after, you know, I remember there was one interview I was doing, I think it was with Rasheed Warner, our last interview, where I was talking to him, and it went a little bit longer than it should have, you know, I think it was 20, 25 minutes, but about the 10-minute mark, I got a text from his publicist or whatever saying, go ahead and cut the interview, you know, go ahead and wrap up, you know, and I didn't get it till after the interview, of course, you know, because I don't pay attention to texts that come in, you know,
right.
So. But, yeah, man.
I have to be realistic. I know how good Earl is, but it wouldn't hurt my feelings if there's an upset here because this guy is a class dude, and I think the media will love him to death.
Yeah. Well, and let's not forget, Chris Van Heerden was also next in line to fight Kell Brook. He had a fight signed and delivered to fight Kell Brook. And that actually fell apart with the whole Frankie Gavin thing. I think Frankie was that, you know.
Right.
But Van Heerden was next in line. He was going to fight for the championship.
Yeah.
That's how good Van Heerden is. He's a contender. He's not a pushover, man. So it could be a very, very interesting fight. So I'd be real interested to see how Errol Spence takes care of this in there. Now, on the undercard of this as well, now we're talking about people over 40. Okay, talking about people over 40 fighting, all right? Remember, this is in Toronto. Yeah. Dylan Carman, the famous Dylan Carman, will fight Donovan Razor Ruddick.
Oh, Frank.
10 rounds in the heavyweight division. I don't know that it will be televised, but he is fighting on there, right?
I don't want to see it.
Yeah, he has made a comeback as of since. He's got like one or two wins on his comeback trail. So why he's coming back, I don't know. I have no idea.
And we have fights, I believe, that night also on True TV.
We absolutely do. From Las Vegas, True TV. Chris Avalos versus Oscar Valdez, 10 rounds in the featherweight division. Cincinnati's own Aaron Pryor Jr., Baby Hawk, is going to fight Jesse Hart, 10 rounds, super middleweights. I love Aaron Pryor. I love Aaron Pryor Jr. I just don't think he's going to get past Jesse Hart. He's being brought in. He's definitely being brought in as an opponent in this fight.
Oh, and the rumor has it. I forgot to add this to our news and rumors section, but since you mentioned his name, the rumor has it, if Jesse Hart wins on Friday, he will be the next one in line for a title shot to go over to Germany and fight Arthur Abraham.
Arthur Abraham, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting to me. Yeah, because Jesse Hart is no joke, man. Jesse Hart will beat Arthur Abraham. Jesse Hart is a really talented fighter.
Yeah, but he's got to beat up Junior to get that fight official.
Yeah, like I said, man, and I love the Cincinnati guys and everything like that, man. Pryor Jr. is just he's there, not necessarily for a payday, but he's there. You know, he's there as an opponent. Put it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get past Jesse Hart. As much as I'd like to see him get past him, I don't think he will. So,
there you go.
So let's talk about the big fight, man. September 12th on
Saturday. We've got two cards on Saturday. We've got the PBC on NBC Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock.
Right. But let's talk about the big one first. Let's talk about the Mayweather fight here.
All right.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. versus Andre Berto to go 49-0 and equal Rocky Marciano's record. I don't know. I tell you what, man. I don't know that there's any way that Andre Berto wins this fight.
Nope.
And Andre Berto doesn't win this fight because he's well past his prime.
Yep.
His best days are way behind him.
Right.
What is he, a 40-1 underdog? I read when this first came out, it was like 80-1 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's something
it's still way out there.
Yeah.
Andre Berto doesn't deserve to be in the same ring as Mayweather. This is not a competitive fight. I don't know that, you know, I don't know what Andre Berto can do short of bringing a knife or a gun or anything like that into the ring with him that night that's going to make this fight competitive. You know, unless Floyd Jr. walks to the ring and breaks his leg on the way to the ring, I still give him 5-1 odds to win. I don't know that there's any way Berto wins this fight. Give me a scenario that Berto wins this fight.
I can't give you one. I literally cannot give you one. Although, the one thing I can say about Andre Berto, his fights are never boring. But I think for the first time in his career, he's going to be in a snooze fest. And keep one thing in mind. This is what Showtime thinks of this fight, folks. What time does pay-per-views, when you schedule a pay-per-view, if you're Showtime or HBO, what time do they normally start?
9.
Guess what? For Floyd and his going away party, supposedly, which I don't believe. I'm not going to believe it until next May, when two fighters have that May 7th date. Showtime starting the pay-per-view at 8:00. Okay, they're starting this at 8:00 Eastern Time, 5 Pacific, this is unprecedented to me. You know the countdown show like they have at 7.
Right.
Before the pay-per-view, they're actually putting Ishae Smith on with Vonis Matarojan to be a fight before the card even starts.
Yeah, I mean, they're pulling out all the stops to try to get you to buy this. I mean,
yeah.
They really are. They're pulling out all the stops to get you to buy this fight, you know.
But yet there's no promotional buzz. I haven't seen too many commercials for this. You know, normally when Mayweather fights, you see ads all over the internet, you know, trying to get you to... The network itself, I don't believe, really cares about this fight. They just want it over with.
Right. Yeah, nobody, I mean, I think that's the thing, too. I mean, it's, nobody really cares about it. I mean, because it's not a competitive fight. And everybody knows it's not a competitive fight. You're not fooling anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not fooling anybody by saying this is a competitive fight. I know Mayweather's towel boy, Leonard LRB, has come out and said, oh, yeah, this is going to be a great fight. It's going to be action-packed. You've never seen Berto in a boring fight. So what? I never seen Pacquiao in a boring fight either until, you know, last May.
Yeah.
You know, he puts people to sleep. Nobody wants to see a track meet, and that's what you're going to see.
Yep.
You know, I mean... You can't, like I said, man, and we were talking about the Pacquiao fight the other day, and, you know, I said, you know, you really can't blame Pacquiao for that. He was trying. I mean, he was trying to make him fight, you know, and he doesn't want to fight. He's not going to fight, you know. And, I mean, and the thing is, like I said, man, with Santa Cruz and Abner Morris, when you see that fight, that's what people want to see when they put down their money and pay for a fight. That's what people want to see. What you're going to see in November with Cotto and Canelo, that's what people are going to want to see.
Yeah,
that's a pay-per-view fight.
And how about with Lemieux and Triple G?
Even though same deal.
Even though it should not be a pay-per-view fight, 20,000 tickets have been, I guarantee you it's been sold out by now. I don't know that officially. But 20,000 people in the big Madison Square Garden are going to get their money's worth.
Right. And there,
you know,
that's going to be a fight.
Yeah.
Both of those guys can punch, and a punch from either guy can end it. I mean, that's the way it is. You know, with this one right here, it's still in slow ticket sales. I understand that it's not sold out.
No.
It's, you know, I mean, maybe it gets comped out.
Yeah.
But it's not going to get sold out.
This pay-per-view here, the main event anyway, is almost as bad as Sugar Shane Mosley and Ricardo Mayorga. Okay. I mean,
right. And I think a couple of weeks ago I asked you if you had to, if you could watch either fight, but you could only watch one on pay per view.
Right.
Who would you watch? And you said Mosley and Mayorga.
Exactly.
You know, not even this one. Not even this guy. I mean, this guy.
No.
You know, and we could hope. I mean, you know, and I don't mean to pile on his back because I mean, I don't mean to diminish his record, 49-0. You know, he's beat a lot of good fighters. But, you know, I've said it in the past. I'm not saying he's not a great fighter. He's a great fighter. That's why we want to see him in there against great fighters.
Well, really,
you know,
well,
we want to see him in there against...
keep one thing in mind, folks. Remember, there was another fighter back in the 80s that was 48-0. And after he won his 48th fight, he basically said, Rocky Marciano couldn't carry my jockstrap. Nobody's ever going to beat me. I'm the best there is, the best there was. And,
right.
and he made a big deal about how nobody in his division was going to beat him because he won 20 successful title defenses. And a little guy out of nowhere from good old St. Louis, Missouri, shows up in the ring. And he's supposed to go to sleep. And what does he do? He not only beats him once, he beats him twice.
Beat him twice.
And his name is Michael Spinks.
The
unfortunately,
jinx.
Unfortunately for us, Andre Berto is no Michael Spinks.
He's not even close. He's not even close. And they said, I think Roy Jones was quoted as saying, you know, if the Berto of old shows up, then we're going to have a fight. The Berto of old is not going to show up because the Berto of old does not exist. He's not going to fight. You know, that guy is not going to fight. You know, because that guy is no longer here. That's like saying the Roy Jones of old, if he shows up. That's not going to happen.
No.
You know, and Andre Berto of old wasn't that great to begin with.
No,
you know?
I think Andre Berto's best fight was probably in a loss when he fought Robert Guerrero.
Right. Right. You know. And the thing with, you know, it's not like, you know, you're saying that he's going to make Mayweather fight. No, he's not. You know, and Mayweather is such a great talent, and this is what, and I think this is what gets missed, and why everybody has such a big problem with Mayweather, is that you want to see him in there against top class people, top class competition. You know, you want to see him in there. You know, like I said, he's got 254-pound titles. Go fight Triple G. Go fight, you know, Arislandi Lara. Start testing yourself, man. I mean, that's what people want to see. They want to see you in there against big names, you know, top-caliber competition. Berto does not fit that mold.
And remember, Larry Holmes got criticized unbelievable because he chose to fight a guy like Michael Spinks because Michael Spinks was so much smaller. You know, you just picked an easy fight so you can tie the record. And, of course, Michael Spinks went in there and totally destroyed everybody's plans. But, you know, I mean, so I understand when champions approach records, they want to make sure they can succeed. I get it. But, look, I don't even want his name mentioned. I agree with the Rocky Marciano family. I don't want his name mentioned next to my relative. But there ain't no way that God will allow Andre Berto to actually win this fight. So, unfortunately for us and those of us that follow this sport, Floyd Mayweather's name will be next to Rocky Marciano, and the question will be from Saturday forward: will he actually put his name at the top by breaking Marciano's record? And I think that he will have a 50th fight. I don't believe this retirement talk. His ego does not allow him to share the stage with anybody. And let's face it, what does Floyd love more than anything else? M-O-N-E-Y. It's called money.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, and I, like I said, man, I, you know, and his contract with CBS and the Showtime expires after this fight. So at this point, he can go back to HBO for his 50th fight. I don't know that he will, but he could. He could go back to HBO. He could do any number of things.
What will happen is it'll go to the highest bidder.
Right, and I think Heyman's going to win that. You know, I think that CBS and, you know.
Yeah.
Because at that point, that's what they're suspecting is that, you know, he's going to have to fight somebody for his 50th that poses a real challenge.
And look, and I still say you've
like
got
Kareem Mayfield or something like that. I mean, somebody of some note, you know, which was, you know, as we all know, Kareem Mayfield was between the two people he were going to fight. He was going to fight was between Andre Berto and Kareem Mayfield, and he chose Berto over Mayfield. This is horrible. I mean, this is seriously horrible.
Now, look, we got some decent undercard fights.
Absolutely. Very stacked undercard, man.
Yeah.
Badu Jack, the co-main event here, Badu Jack versus George Groves.
Yep.
This is going to be a dynamite fight. Is it pay-per-view worthy? No.
No.
But it's going to be a very good fight. And friend of the show, Badu Jack, how can you root against him?
That's right. No,
I think he beats George Groves. I really do.
Yes, I do too. I think George goes back to the UK with an L on his record.
Disappointing day for the Queen.
Yep.
And then you got Roman Martinez versus Orlando Salido, which this fight was actually their first fight, was actually on pay-per-view.
Yes, it was.
The first fight was actually on pay-per-view, which we were like mind blown when we heard that.
It was April 11th in Puerto Rico.
Right, and it went up against like what is it, a free TV fight or something?
Yeah,
like that.
It went up against Danny Garcia and Roman Peterson.
Right, you know. Yeah, that's a big fight too. Yeah, I was like, what? Of all the fight, all the fights it could have went up against, but Orlando Salido came up short in that one. They're going to rematch. It should be a good one.
Yes, that will be a good fight. Yes.
And then Johnny Gonzalez fights also too on that undercard, and then Vines Matarosian fights Ishe Smith, of course, on the pre-fight. Now, okay, well, let's take this. The pay-per-view is what, $74.95.
Okay, yeah, if you have HD, it's $75.
Everybody's going to pay for it in HD. Yeah, if you're going to watch the fight, you might as well watch it in HD.
Yeah.
So is the pay-per-view, is the actual pay-per-view card worth it, in your opinion?
I hate to sound like a hater, but I love all the other fights but the main event.
Right.
Um, Now, granted, EJ Smith will put me to sleep, so thank God he's not part of the pay-per-view. But
right, but you got Johnny Gonzalez in there on the undercard. He's a good fighter.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? Honestly, I don't think it is. They stacked that undercard for a reason. I mean, because it is a stacked undercard. It's one of the best undercards that we've seen in recent memory on a pay-per-view fight.
The last time we had this kind of undercard, if you want to be realistic about it, was 2 years ago in September when Mayweather fought Canelo.
Yeah.
Because what was the co-main? Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse.
Right. Yeah, so definitely, I mean, absolutely. A very good undercard. I can't tell people not to buy it. In my opinion, I'm not going to buy it. I'll tell you that. I'm not going to pay for it. Who knows? I say that now, and come Saturday, who knows? But my wife is shaking her head that she's not going to let me buy it either.
Good move, Lisa.
That's right. I would have a hard time paying for this fight because, the main event is what you're going to pay for, and that's going to be a whitewash.
You've got the internet, so you can probably stream it later.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch the fight. I'm not saying I'm not going to watch the fight. We'll definitely watch the fight, but as far as paying $75. I don't think so, and I don't think it's worth it, even with the undercard, because those are all fights that should be on TV.
Yep.
I don't think it's worth it, but yeah.
So. Well, and rumor has it that Heyman is not very happy with Floyd because Heyman wanted this. He wanted this on CBS.
And I don't understand why this fight wasn't on CBS. I'd have a hard time watching it if it was on CBS, but I can't understand why it's not on CBS.
Because Floyd's contract calls for all of his fights to be pay-per-view. And he doesn't want to give anybody anything for free.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why Heyman did the CBS card on Sunday and why he's doing an NBC card on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, they're doing everything possible to make this pay-per-view a success. Because, like you said, he has the NBC card going off on Saturday as well, which is a very good card also. But, and it's not going to interfere, obviously not going to interfere with the pay-per-view.
No.
But, they're doing everything possible to make this pay-per-view a success. And the fact that it hasn't sold out yet, we're less than a week away now, that it hasn't sold out yet, I mean, just to me tells you where the public is on this.
Yeah.
And I think this will be a very low-selling pay-per-view. I really do.
My dream here is that the Mayweather pay-per-view crashes and I think the lowest number Floyd has ever sold for a pay-per-view since he's become a mega pay-per-view star was the fight that he had with Robert Guerrero. I think the Guerrero fight only got 450 or 475,000.
This ain't coming. I heard they were both doing like 200 or 300, both Pacquiao and Mayweather, prior to their fight, for their couple of fights or whatever that they had before this. We're only doing 200,000 to 300,000.
Okay.
Pay-per-views.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the other two pay-per-view fights that we've got guaranteed this year, even though the one in October is not worthy, I want boxing fans to step up to the plate and make both the Lemieux Triple G and the Cotto Canelo much bigger than Floyd's.
Right. I think they will be. I really do. I really do.
Because, and this is for Lisa's benefit, these are two cards worth spending your money on, so you cannot complain about those.
That's right. That's right. Let me have that purse, and let's pay for these two fights here. Let's talk about let's move on from this card, and let's talk about the NBC, the PBC on NBC.
Yep.
And that takes place also that Saturday afternoon.
4 o'clock.
Cornelius Bundridge, K-9, versus Jermell Charlo. Junior middleweights for Bundridge's IBF title. I think Charlo gets him on this one. I don't.
This is another fighter. I talk about Ishii Smith putting me to sleep.
Yeah.
So does K-9. So please, Charlo, do us all a favor and put this guy out of his misery so we don't see him, because this is another guy over 40 that should not be in the ring. So get rid of him and do it in an impressive fashion.
I think Charlo wins this fight rather easily. I really do. I don't think that, you know, Bundridge has been kind of off the map here for a little while. I think Charlo walks this fight.
Yep.
I don't think he has any trouble with this at all. Kid Chocolate back on the warpath here. Peter Quillin versus Michael Zarafa.
I don't know anything about this dude, but he's basically being paid to go to sleep.
Absolutely.
If Quillin pulls an Anthony Durrell, then we've got serious issues about Peter Quillin.
Yeah, and Peter Quillin, man, I think is a solid fighter. I really do. I think he's a solid fighter. I think he dispatches Zafara, and I think he knocks him out.
And rumor has it, once again, the guy has to be successful. The next fight for Quillin is Quillin and Jacobs at the Barclays.
Quillin, yeah, that I think that's a good fight too. I think you don't want to see the rematch of Mora and Jacobs.
No, absolutely not.
Now let's talk about this. Let's talk about the fight across the pond, also on Saturday. Big heavyweight fight going on there. Gary Cornish versus Anthony Joshua, 12 rounds heavyweights. Anthony Joshua really, really being hyped here. They're talking about him. He's being the next Lennox Lewis over there, not maybe fight style-wise, but champion-wise. They're thinking that he's going to be the next heavyweight champion, and he's showing a lot of promise thus far. Not fighting a lot of big competition, but showing a lot of promise.
When you're put in with plenty of marshmallows, you got to look good. So may he continue.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Tuesday, September 15th on Fox Sports 1, that'll be we won't get the show off before then, but Sammy Vasquez versus Jose Lopez, 10 rounds welterweights, and Thomas Williams versus Humberto Savinier, 10 rounds light heavyweights.
Well, Vasquez and Williams are supposed to be the two winners here. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I heard a rumor before Earl – Spence was signed to fight Chris Van Heerden. Sammy Vasquez was actually being considered. So
I heard that too. Yeah, I had heard that too. But I think Chris Van Heerden might be a better fight for him.
Yeah,
just a more competitive fight. I don't know.
So yeah, and once again, for those of you that have to get used to Tuesdays, you might as well pencil in every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock to set your VCR. I mean, DVR, excuse me, VCR, my God, that's ancient. But it looks like every Tuesday at 9 o'clock we're going to have boxing, so stay tuned.
I still say record. You know, how does that date me? You know, I tell you what. Yeah, I say, you know, record the fights or something like that. Or just back in the old time,
Yeah.
I remember when we first got our VCR, it had a remote control, and I use that kind of loosely, remote control.
Yeah.
It was still
on
a cord. It wasn't a wireless remote control or anything. It was still on a cord that went from the VCR to your hand, and all you could hit the record button, and it stayed on there, and you could see it, you know, and then you could just click on the remote, you know, you'll click record and then stop.
So
you can actually, you know, record the fights and, you know, get out the commercials and everything like that. So when you watch
you
it
go.
Again, it was crazy.
Yeah.
So speaking of the old time, let's talk about our history lesson here.
Hell of a fight here.
Exactly. November 12th, 1982. We're going deep. Aaron Pryor versus Alexis Arguello. Now, on the surface, these two were just completely polar opposites. You know, Arguello, in and out of the ring, I mean, because you look at Aaron Pryor, and he always had these people around him. He always had this big entourage, and Alexis Arguello, you always see him in a suit. You always see him, you know, just very, very, almost seemed very well-educated, spoke very well.
To quote ZZ Top here, he was a sharp-dressed man.
Absolutely,
you know?
And Pryor was always, you know, almost like thuggish in a way, you know, where people viewed him as thuggish. Now, that was what he portrayed, and that's what, almost like an Adrian Broner, you know.
Exactly, I was going to say that, you know.
Right.
So Broner is living up to the Cincinnati tradition, you know.
Right, and Pryor was very far from that, and I mean, if you ever got a chance to talk to Aaron Pryor, you know that he's very far from what most people thought he was, you know. But, you know, and inside the ring, Arguello, they were polar opposite. Arguello was like a thinking man's fighter, a natural boxer.
Right.
He was actually out there playing chess with his opponents.
Yep.
Pryor, it just had speed and power and threw about 100,000 punches per round.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
He was like the Tasmanian devil in there. I mean, he was just a tornado.
Yep.
I mean, it just wrecks everything in his path. I mean, that's what he was. Mm-hmm. You know, when this fight was announced, I always thought it was a mismatch, man. I remember watching Arguello throughout his career and just thinking, Pryor is just too strong for that guy. I always liked Arguello, especially after the Mancini fight.
Yep.
He was always just so classy, man. He was so courteous to Mancini and his father after the fight.
Yep.
I remember after he just laid the beating on Mancini. I mean, that was a fight. That was one of those fights I was really looking forward to. I thought Arguello would win. But you just didn't know, man, because Mancini was more of a brawler type.
That's
and
right.
The way Arguello just picked him apart in that fight was just unreal to me.
Yep.
I mean, Arguello was just masterful in that fight. And he was just elevated after the fight when he said, you know, if there's anything I could do for you and your father, he said, just let me know, you know. It just unbelievable class act.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, Alexis Arguello was and probably I think he still is, you know, a class guy, because I believe he's still alive.
No, he was actually he committed suicide, so to speak, and we'll talk about this afterwards. But I'll tell you about that. But yeah, again, I always liked Arguello, and I always, of course, being from Cincinnati, Pryor was the guy, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The fight. This is one of those fights that actually lived up to all the hype. You know, you saw the Sugar Ray Leonard and Thomas Hearns fight that lived up to the hype.
Right.
You know, the Hagler-Hearns fight, of course, lived up to the hype. This
right.
fight was one of those with the Chavez-Taylor. This is another fight that actually lived up to all the hype.
Right.
Both fighters had their moments. One of the best moments was before the fight. Aaron did like he did with all of his opponents. He stood right in the middle of the ring and just pointed his fist right at Arguello as he was being announced or as he was being introduced. You knew he was just ready and he meant business, man. I mean, that was Pryor's thing, is he just stood in the middle of the ring and pointed his fist right at you. And he just stood there. And, I mean, just stared you down and just had this look on his face like you know, this is not going to be your night, you know.
And for most opponents, it scared them to death. But it did,
right.
it did not phase Alexis Arguello one bit.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know?
As expected, though, Pryor, you know, and Arguello was a notably slow starter.
Right.
You know, and as expected, Pryor took his fast pace and completely walked the early part of this fight.
Yeah.
The first round especially, you just didn't know what you were seeing. You were just like, I can't believe I'm watching this, because Arguello was just manhandled in that first round.
Right.
I mean, Pryor came out and just threw, again, his patented million punches around, and just he looked like a tornado in there. And, you know, in the second, you know, Pryor kind of stepped it up. In the third, Arguello stepped it up and would start landing some shots, kind of picking his shots, you know. But, again, he's not winning rounds because Pryor is throwing and landing so many shots.
Right.
And even through the seventh round, I mean, you know, Pryor is building a big lead. Going into the tenth round, Pryor's got a lead, you know. And not to say that Arguello didn't have his moments. He absolutely did.
Yeah.
Very back and forth fight, and you know, he landed a shot. I mean, he landed just vicious shots. I mean, Arguello landed shots on him that you thought, you know, this guy, what is keeping this guy up? You know, because you land that on anybody else and they're gone. You know, I mean, he landed hard, clean shots on Pryor, and Pryor did the same. I mean, Pryor absolutely did the same. Pryor was just a savage in there, you know. Arguello had won the 13th round, and he started gaining momentum right around that time, right around the 11th, 12th, 13th round.
Right.
He really started gaining some momentum, and even though he was trailing on the cards, he seemed to be gaining that momentum. He was trailing on two of the three cards, and that's when it happened. The one that I mixed. Give me the one that I mixed, stated Panama Lewis Pryor's trainer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's only supposed to be, now let me explain this for those of you who don't know, the only substance you're allowed in the corner is water.
It's water.
That's it. Water. I don't even know, I don't think adrenaline is allowed anymore, you know, to stop the cuts or anything like that. Vaseline or Albaline and water are really the only substances that are allowed in the corner.
And you have the inswell and...
Sure, you have the inswell and the buckets and everything like that.
Right,
and
yeah.
Nothing else. Nothing else. You know, you have the Q-tips and the gauze, or not gauze, but the Q-tips and everything like that for the cuts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The Vaseline for the cuts and the Albaline. You know,
right.
Some fighters are allergic to Vaseline. Mike Tyson was one of the famous guys that was allergic to Vaseline.
Right.
You have Albaline instead. Mm-hmm. That's it. Those are the only substances allowed. So when he said, give me the one that I mixed, HBO cameras picked it up. He says, give me the one that I mixed. There shouldn't have been anything. And it was in a black bottle. It was in a bottle that was taped with a – it looked like it was wrapped with electrical tape or something like that.
Right.
That was, you know, the quote-unquote bottle, though, the one that I mixed.
Yeah.
Pryor then came out in the 14th round like a demon and put away Alexis Arguello with one of the most brutal assaults that you'll ever see in a fight. I mean, it was just amazing display of brutality. It was just combinations after combinations. I mean, rights, lefts. And I think the right hand, the last right hand that he hit him with that actually crumpled him to the canvas was just, I mean, his head snapped back. He was out against those ropes.
And,
he was just completely out.
Unfortunately, you know, the fight was tainted after this because obviously they had to do an investigation. And of course they found out that Panama Lewis and whoever else was involved put some kind of illegal substance in that bottle. And so probably for the rest of his life, that victory is tainted.
It is. And the worst part about it is that whatever was in that bottle, he didn't need it.
And to this day, I don't think we ever found out what it was.
Well, we have some suspicions, and we think we know what it is. What it is was, now, after the fight, the Panama Lewis came out and said it was peppermint schnapps. This is what he said, to settle Pryor's stomach. How peppermint schnapps will settle your stomach, I have no idea. That was one of them, and we heard, you know, other things, what was in there. The most likely culprit that it was antihistamines, crushed up antihistamines in the bottle.
Right, right.
And this is what Panama Lewis had actually given Louis Resto, one of his other fighters. That's the one where he took padding out of his gloves and everything.
Yeah, that disgusting piece of work.
Right,
yeah.
He mixed up antihistamines. And what antihistamines do is they obviously open up your breathing, but they give you a boost of energy also.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it comes pretty quick because Pryor came blazing out of that corner. So we think it was crushed up antihistamines that were in that bottle,
yeah.
the quote unquote one that he mixed. So really put a taint, a bad taste in the fight and everything like that. Cause Pryor really didn't need that to win. He really didn't.
Know,
he was winning the fight handily.
Aaron Pryor reminds me of, unfortunately, Marco Antonio, the one that fought Cotto, you know who I mean. What's his name?
Margarito. Antonio Margarito.
Margarito, yeah. That had the plaster in his glove.
Right.
I mean, you don't need to cheat to win.
No, you were winning that fight anyway. He was winning that fight anyway. You know, and when you look back on it, you're like, why in the world did you do that? You didn't need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this guy Pryor's fought that before. He's fought 15 rounds. He's fought him bell to bell.
And now that I think about it, you are right. I had totally forgotten about Alexis Arguello, you know, not being here anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so after the fight, they fought again. They had a fight in Miami about a year later. Another fight in Miami. Wasn't even close. Pryor knocked him down in the first round. I think he knocked him down. He knocked him down a couple of times in that fight.
Right.
And Alexis
I think that was towards the end of Alexis's career, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you know? I think they both retired after that fight, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I know I remember Alexis calling the referee over and just kind of counting him out, you know, and he just said, hey, that's it. He was a better guy tonight, and that was that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, man, I mean, you know, their first fight, even if he didn't take anything in the bottle, the fight was – what it was. I mean, it was a great fight. Pryor won the fight, you know. I mean, clearly it was too big for him, too strong for him.
Yeah, and of course, that entire corner got thrown out of boxing, pretty much.
Absolutely, yeah. Panama Lewis was, blacklisted, or not black, but suspended.
Yeah.
After the Louis Resto fight, you know.
Well, you might as well say blacklisted. I don't think he ever got back in a corner after that.
Not legally, no. And, I mean, no. He's trained fighters since then, of course.
Yeah.
But he's never been allowed to corner them, so why would you want a trainer that can't corner you there on the night of the fight, you know?
That's
you
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a piece of history, man. What a great fight. And,
fight that unfortunately will always have a major black mark.
Yeah.
Didn't need to be there.
Didn't need to be there. And, of course, Pryor went on to retire after that fight. I think he came back and he might have lost or whatever. I don't know. He's only got one loss on his record, so.
Yeah.
You know, and he had his problem with drugs, of course, and everything like that. And, of course, he's back.
Right.
Back on the straight and narrow now, doing well. But Alexis Arguello was actually the mayor of Argentina, I believe. He became the mayor.
Nicaragua.
He's
from Nicaragua, yeah.
Yeah, so he became the mayor out there. Now, he actually, they ruled it a suicide. He shot himself with a shotgun in the chest. He took a shotgun to the chest, and they ruled it a suicide. Nobody believes it was suicide, of course. Everybody believes he was murdered by someone, but...
that kind of like reminds me of the Arturo Gatti.
Right. You know? I mean, clearly that wasn't suicide, you know?
Yeah.
That's the fight, but those two, man...
Yeah, and that's the dark side of this episode.
Right, exactly, you know.
Yeah.
But I tell you, those two really gave us everything they had that night, man. So definitely one of the best fights we'd ever seen. So
that's right.
All right. So now, speaking of Alexis Arguello, let's move on to the fantasy fight, because he couldn't beat Aaron Pryor. All right.
Nope.
Could he beat Juan Manuel Marquez? I don't know.
I don't know. We picked this.
This is interesting, man. So, say the fight took place about 135, you know, because Marquez was at 140. He walks around about 140.
Right.
He's been at 135. Arguello's been at 135.
Right.
So, let's look at this. Marquez is 5'7 with a 67-inch reach. Arguello, I knew, would have an advantage. I didn't think it would be this big, though. 5'10. He's 5'10 with a 72-inch reach.
Well, kind of like Jamie McDonald this weekend.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of when I was watching that McDonald fight. That's exactly what I thought about.
Yeah.
The one thing I will tell you that I think that Marquez has trouble with pure boxers, and I look at two people. I look at Floyd Mayweather, and Arguello is no Floyd Mayweather, but but Chris John was the other one, the Dragon, Chris John, who really gave Marquez a lot of problems. Now, of course, obviously beat Marquez.
Yep.
But those two guys are classic boxers. Who else is a classic boxer? Alexis Arguello. He's a classic boxer.
Yep.
And he's beaten many classic boxers over time. All right. So let's break it down here. Speed advantage I would give to Arguello. I mean, neither fighter was especially quick, but speed advantage I would have to give it to Arguello. The chin, I would give it to Arguello. I mean, the bombs he took with Pryor, I mean, he, you know, who was a bigger, stronger guy. Power, I got to go with Arguello.
Yep, because Arguello, he only went the distance when he had to. His idea of winning fights was end them as early as possible.
Right, right.
You know?
And then, I think speed, chin, power. You know, I think Arguello probably would have got Marquez out of there. I don't know if he would have got him out of there, but I think he definitely wins a 12-round decision.
Yeah, and he would have dominated. Yeah, he definitely would have dominated on the scorecards.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think especially with the way he fought, because he fought, he used his height.
Yep.
And, I think, to me, I think if he didn't knock him out, I think he would have definitely won a 12-round decision, and I think it was lopsided.
Yep. This wasn't like last week where it was four for Mayweather, four for Whittaker, and two draws.
Right, that was a draw, but this no draw here, man. This was this is the real deal here, man. I think that, like I said, I think that Arguello wins this one. So you say Arguello, I say Arguello by a decision.
Yep.
You say Arguello by decision or knockout?
I would say by knockout.
Okay.
Yeah.
Computer agrees with Robbie. because the computer says we did this 10 times. Computer says Arguello wins in 7. He knocks him out in about 7 rounds.
Okay.
Arguello won pretty handily on this. I think he won 7 out of 10 times, actually.
Okay. All right.
It was pretty lopsided.
That's 70%, yeah.
Yeah, and most of them were by knockout. So, yeah.
Okay.
It was,
all right.
I was kind of shocked. I was like, wow. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And do we have a treat for you all next week?
Tell them about next week, man. This is a very interesting one. I think it's very appropriate, especially given the fact that Mayweather's going to equal this guy's record next Saturday.
Now, on Saturday. Now, I got to tell you, I don't go looking for these things. They literally just fall into my lap. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, I was reading the USA Today sports section, and they had a fantastic article on Rocky Marciano and his family and how the family was very, to put it mildly, pissed off at Floyd Mayweather. They don't think Floyd Mayweather is worthy because they interviewed Rocky Marciano, one of Rocky Marciano's brothers, and they interviewed Rocky Marciano's son. And a lot of good things came out of that article, including the fact that in 1969, when Muhammad Ali was still suspended by the U.S. government because he would not go to Vietnam, to stay in shape, he went to Rocky Marciano's gym on a regular basis, and they sparred routinely. And they had an agreement in place that when Ali's suspension was lifted in 1970, that was supposed to be the comeback fight for Muhammad Ali. It was supposed to be Muhammad Ali against Rocky Marciano. Now, of course, it would have been a non-title fight because back then Rocky didn't have the title. I don't know if he gave it up or what happened, but he didn't have the title then. So this was going to be a non-title fight between Rocky Marciano and Muhammad Ali. So next week we're going to give you the fight that was supposed to take place, believe it or not, Muhammad Ali and Rocky Marciano.
Very interesting fight. Very interesting fight. So we'll look forward to that for sure.
Eric, you read the article, because I'm the one that called you and told you, hey, you need to read this.
Right, right.
Tell everybody what you thought.
I thought it was very interesting, and we'll move on. We're moving on to the news and rumors section, and let's talk about that for a minute. The article, Marciano's family really wasn't pleased with Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, again, you got Floyd Mayweather Sr. coming out and being Floyd Mayweather Sr., calling Marciano a bum. For anybody to call Marciano a bum is just stupid. You know, the guy is, you know, like I said, he holds a record of 49-0 before he, you know, pseudo-retired. You know, he was involved in a plane crash, I believe. Wasn't a plane crash, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And so he wasn't, you know, he didn't retire. He got retired, you know.
Yeah,
he was still fighting.
That's the ultimate retirement, folks.
Right, you know. And so for anybody to call this guy a bum on any level is just, you're being silly. You know, you're just being silly. That's like me calling Floyd Mayweather a bum. He's not a bum. He's a brilliant fighter. I mean, we give him a lot of grief on the show, of course, but he's a brilliant fighter. You can't take anything away from what he's done. We can pick at what he's done. You know, we can say, hey, he didn't fight this guy in his prime, or he didn't. But 49 wins is not a bad accomplishment. It's a great accomplishment, you know. So, you know, for you to call somebody a bum, you know, on that is just ridiculous. But his family has said, Marciano's family, I'm speaking of, has said that they thought that, like, how is it that Floyd hasn't fought, you know, because of those comments, you know, and they obviously clearly don't like those comments, you know, they said that Floyd hasn't fought people in their prime, and he's ducked a lot of fighters also, whereas Marciano didn't duck anybody. He fought everybody he could, either in their prime, not in their prime, whatever. He fought everybody, you know, all comers. You know, he never turned down a fight. He fought everybody, all the contenders, all the number ones. He wiped that division clean, you know, and they're, you know, they don't like the fact that Floyd is going to be 49-0 with Marciano and equaling that record with Marciano. And it's mainly Marciano's brother. I'm not so sure about his whole family and how they feel about it, but Marciano's brother was really the most vocal about it.
Absolutely.
Coming out and saying all this.
Well, and his son wasn't real pleased about it either. So,
right. Yeah, his son wasn't pleased about it either. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, look, I mean, the thing is, I think with Mayweather, what gets tripped up, and I kind of look past all this. I mean, he's been involved in some train wrecks of the week, and you know, we make a lot of fun of his jewelry and stuff like that when he buys it. And we talk a lot about that, but he's a character. This is a guy he's playing. This is good guy, bad guy wrestling.
I mean, hell, this guy has so much money. I don't know if you've been watching the All Access that Showtime has been putting out for this fight, but the second episode they showed on Friday night, what was the highlight of that episode? Floyd Mayweather driving up to the gym in a $5 million car.
Ooh, I saw that on the news. It's a $5
million. Give me a break.
He flaunts his money out, and nobody likes that, but he's a character. You know, I'm more irritated with the fact that he won't fight Golovkin or Lara or fighters that are going to challenge him. Andre Berto holds no challenge. Manny Pacquiao, who was way past his prime when he fought, you know, I mean, that fight took place 5 years way too late. Would it have changed anything? I don't know. I don't know, but it wasn't the same fight.
But as boxing fans, Eric, we wanted the choice to find out whether it would have or not.
Right.
You know, that the one thing that everybody hates about Floyd is he waits on purpose until somebody reaches a certain age, and then he'll say, okay, you're next. Or he takes a guy like Canelo, who doesn't have enough experience in big fights. Okay, I'm going to throw you into the lion's den. Let's see what you do.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, most people can't deal with that. Because if you've never been in that spotlight before, you have to, in order to be a successful boxer in this business, you have to know how to handle the limelight, the spotlight, what it's like to actually be on a pay-per-view, knowing that people are paying on TV to see you fight.
Right. Right. And I think that's the thing. I mean, with, and obviously there was no pay-per-view back then and everything like that, but Marciano fought tough guys. He fought the toughest guys that he was able to fight. You know, that's like calling, you know, Klitschko a bum because he doesn't fight anybody. He fights the guys that are available.
And now, I remember back when Joe Louis and Rocky Marciano and other people were fighting, they used to fill up the baseball stadiums. We didn't have a lot of indoor arenas. They used to put fights at Yankee Stadium.
Right.
Okay? You know, I mean, New York was known for holding their a lot of outside fights.
Right. Yeah, so, when somebody's calling your father or your sibling a bum, yeah, I don't blame you for being ticked off, you know, and the way they act and everything like that. I mean, it's just kind of classless, you know. I mean, why diminish what that guy's done?
And, you know, the irritating thing about this whole thing, if Julio Cesar Chavez would have retired at 89-0, we wouldn't be having this conversation now.
Yeah, I mean, and to put it, you know, the thing is at 49-0, Marciano was going to fight on after that. I mean, you know he was going to fight on. If they said he was going to fight on after that.
Yeah.
It just happened to be that was the number, 49.
Yeah.
And he
couldn't
fight anymore because, you know, he was in a plane crash.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, look at Julio Cesar Chavez has equaled that. You know, we'll talk about the real TBE, Cesar Cuenca, who's one away from that. You know, I don't know. It's not really a record, you know. It really isn't. It really isn't a record, you know.
But hell, the media is making it out to be a big deal.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And that's him behind it,
you know.
Yeah. Remember when Holmes was fighting back in the 80s? I mean, they made such a big deal out of this. Everybody was finally relieved when he lost.
Right.
You know.
Right. You know. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see it and see what the reactions are after Saturday because, like I said, unless Mayweather gets shot or breaks a leg, you know, on the way to the ring, then that fight's pretty much predetermined, you know, so.
Yeah, no, this is unfortunately for the Marciano family, and I support you, man. To quote Bill Clinton, I feel your pain because this guy is not worthy to be next year, you know, next to one of the all-time greats in the record book.
Well, and I don't know about that either. I mean, you know, like I said, it's an accomplishment. I mean, 49-0, that's a big accomplishment. I mean, you got to give him his credit. I mean, he's fought a lot of big names, so.
Yeah, but my problem with him is he chooses to fight those big names when they're no longer threats to him.
Right. I agree.
Let's see. What?
So let's talk about this real quick. Manuel Char, I think it was former heavyweight contender, was actually hospitalized overnight after being shot during an altercation in Essen, Germany, at a kebab shop. Because, you know, I know when I want to stir things up, I go to a kebab shop and see what's popping. What? How did you get shot at a kebab shop? What? I mean...
Does this belong in News and Rumors, or does this belong in Train Wreck of the Week?
Believe it or not, this isn't even close to being the Train Wreck of the Week.
Okay.
When things are getting ready to pop off, I always look at the kebab shops, you know. How do you get shot at a kebab shop, son? What are you doing?
This is one of Vladimir Klitschko's victims, by the way.
Unbelievable. But apparently he's going to be okay. The suspects, I don't know. Last I heard, the suspect's still at large. I'll be honest with you, I haven't been following the story that closely because, you know, I mean, the guy got shot in a kebab shop. Draw your own conclusions. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But he's okay, and that's all that really matters. So, you know, the fact he got, you know, popped up in a kebab shop, you know.
And we also have Kel Brook.
This is really interesting, man. Kel Brook will defend his IBF welterweight title against Diego Chavez in Sheffield, England on October 24th. This will be his third title defense of the belt. You know, this to me is kind of a light defense, to be honest with you. I don't think Chavez really poses too much.
I don't think the next fighter we're going to talk about would have done much better, Brandon Rios.
That's the other one. Brandon Rios and Tim Bradley are also in the works for November 7th at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas.
The only thing I don't know, because remember we covered this story a week or two ago, Saddam Ali was the mandatory challenger for the WBO, and he said he was not going to take step-aside money, so I don't know what agreement has been made.
Yeah, it's called a big briefcase full of money in your lap. Yeah. That's what it's called.
Nobody
ever takes step-aside money until it's all laid out in front of you and you can sleep on it. Yeah.
And also, I think this is a disgusting move by Tim Bradley and his ridiculous wife, Monica. They fired Joel Diaz as Bradley's trainer.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute. I mean, what's wrong with that? Everybody came out against Bradley and said, you know, Joel Diaz, by his own admission, I mean, he came out on Twitter and said that he did it via email or text or something like that, but then he came back and recanted and said, no, Tim Bradley, he said he sat down with me and talked to me about it and everything like that. He's been with him for 10 years. But let's face it, man, Bradley, you know, I don't think a different trainer would do Bradley any harm, that's for sure.
No, I'm not mad that he did this, but Joel is a class guy.
True.
And, the way it sounded like he wasn't treated with any respect. And I don't believe the names that Tim Bradley is considering to replace him. Buddy McGirt and Teddy Atlas?
I heard Teddy Atlas's name being thrown around. I also heard Buddy McGirt's name being thrown around.
Yeah. Look, nothing against Buddy McGirt. Buddy McGirt is a decent trainer, but he's best known for training Arturo Gatti to multiple losses. None of Buddy McGirt's fighters have really been successful, and we all know what kind of drama queen, and I'm saying that honestly, drama queen that Teddy Atlas can be in the corner. Yeah. His best spot is behind a microphone.
Both of these guys are really good trainers, though. I mean, you can't really take anything away. I mean, they're both really good. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying they're horrible trainers. Okay, I'm just saying, what are you trying to do? Are you taking the attention off yourself and going to allow one of these guys to soak up all the attention? And so we don't really know what kind of fighter you're going to turn out to be under a new guy.
Right.
I mean, Robert Garcia, and there's other people in California where he's from that he could actually go to. I mean, he's talking about two guys from New York. What's he going to do? Move his wife and five kids from California to New York?
It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that plays out. I mean, I don't know that he moves his kids and wife. I mean, I think he just travels like the other ones do. But I mean, everybody was kind of up in arms about this, and I kind of was too until I read Diaz is, you know, when he recanted and said, because I thought he fired him via Twitter or something like that. I was like, wow, what a jerk, yeah. You know.
I mean,
the guy's looking for a change, and I mean, it happens all the time. But from what Diaz said and what Bradley said, he sat him down and said, look, this is, you know. Now, why Bradley's wife is involved in it, that I don't know. But
well, that's because she's now taking total control of his career. She's his manager now. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Wasn't Jim Mosley Shane's manager too?
Yeah. And of course, they're divorced now, and Shane is scrambling for all kinds of money to pay all the alimony and stuff he owes.
That was the one where she kept his belts and everything like that. He was living in her basement and stuff.
She had total control over the dude's life, you know.
Bringing dudes over the house, trying on Shane's belts, you know.
I don't know.
Great.
I hope that Tim can find somebody he's happy with. I just felt bad for Joel Diaz. He's a class guy. He doesn't deserve to be removed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, man, I've not been a big fan of Bradley for a long time, and maybe this will be, you know, he's been kind of stagnant. I don't think he has, you know, I don't know, man.
But let's be honest.
He'll walk over Rios, though.
I was gonna say. Let's be honest.
Let me tell you what. If Rios puts up a good fight, Tim Bradley ought to think about another line of work, because this should not be competitive.
Yeah.
Not be competitive in the least.
This is a nice payday for tune-up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Speaking of tune-up, Tyson Fury says he's going to retire if he can't beat Klitschko. He's really hyping this fight, man, and if he's true to his word, he's going to be retiring after that fight, because I don't think he beats Klitschko, but the stuff that comes out of this guy's mouth, man, is just amazing. It's great.
Now, remember, on the day of October 24th, I don't know if HBO is going to show all three of these, but we have the possibility of seeing Klitschko Fury, Diego Chavez and Brooke, and then Terrence Crawford fighting his fight that same night.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it could be all day boxing on HBO.
Could be amazing. Could be amazing, and it could not be amazing because they might not show it. So who knows?
Right. Well, I know they're going to show two out of those three.
Absolutely. Let's talk about TBE, the best ever. Cesar Cuenca is scheduled to make his first defense against Edward Troyanovsky, who's 22-0 also. He's undefeated also.
48-0 with two knockouts.
And it takes place on November 4th, which Robbie has informed me is on a Wednesday.
Yes, it is.
In Kazan, in the Basket Hall Arena in Kazan.
Okay.
So Cesar Cuenca, 48-0. I mean, if that's the qualification to be the best ever, hey, you got to give him his props. Hey, he's the best ever, you know. Now, let's move on. Let's move on to our train wreck of the week.
All right. Okay.
Now, let me tell you how bad the train wreck of the week is this week. The fact that Manuel Char, who got shot in the House of Kebabs in Germany, was not the train wreck of the week, just lets you know how bad the train wreck of the week must be.
Mm-hmm.
Two words, Adrian Broner. All right. So Adrian Broner drops the N-word at a press conference this week. Ironically enough, this is the only word he spoke at the press conference. He brought up a representative that he brought up to read a statement. The representative's name was White Ticket. I'm not making this up. The representative was named White Ticket, okay? He read a statement that Broner, you know, craftily constructed himself. White Ticket, as he was reading the statement from Broner, got stuck on a word. And he asked Broner, of course, to clarify the word. The word that he clarified was, of course, the N-word. So that was the one word that Broner spoke of at the press conference. And it was just about somebody getting his back against the wall and, you know, this and that. I talked to my guy from the PBC. And I asked him, I said, you know, can we get Broner on for an interview? Because, you know, he's from Cincinnati, I'm from Cincinnati, why not? You know, he said he didn't think so. He said he didn't think it was going to be possible. He said Broner has not been cooperating with the media as of late. And of course, you know, we got it that he's put a gag order on his media engagements. He's not going to talk to anybody. You know, he's shutting the media out. You know, for this fight against Alakbariev, you know, this big-name opponent that he's got in Cincinnati, he's shutting everybody out for this, you know, so he's not going to hype the fight. Alakbariev, he's not going to hype the fight because I don't know that he speaks English.
Right.
So who's going to hype this fight? I don't know. But whatever. And I said, you know, how come Cleveland gets Sean Porter, who's a class guy, who trains, who does the right things, and Cincinnati gets stuck with this guy? How is that? Why do we always get the shaft? You know, I don't understand that. So, yeah, that's our train wreck of the week, which came in for a close third is our next story because, you know, the kebab house shooting was right up there with it. I got to be honest. Shannon Briggs, of course, leading into his gigantic fight against big name Mike Marrone this weekend. Had another altercation with Vladimir Klitschko. Briggs busted into a gym where Klitschko was apparently working out and demanded a fight because they were in Miami. The two had to be separated by Michael Moore and Evander Holyfield, you know, because Briggs saying, let's go, champ, and he's in his face and he's pushing him and, you know, all this other stuff.
You know, I'm afraid, Eric, that this is actually going to pay off for the dude one day because... And he's going to teach other fighters, hey, you want to fight? You just keep doing all this crap.
Right.
I've got to give the guy credit. I don't like what he's doing,
he's
but
persistent.
Actually he's focusing enough attention on something that probably one day cannot be avoided. But I hope Klitschko continues to avoid because Shannon Briggs, as we discussed earlier, number 5 in the WBO, which means eventually... Oh, and you were gonna look up the WBO rankings and see the four guys ahead of him. Did you ever do that?
I did. I had it, and I lost it. So it was, okay. I think we talked about something else, and I just lost it. So,
yeah. But how he can be ranked number? Eventually, he's going to be a mandatory. And Klitschko, you know, he doesn't avoid mandatory. So,
right.
You know, eventually, give it another year. You might actually see this train wreck, and that will be the train wreck of the week.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah, jeez. Joe Cortez was in the news. He said that Mayweather's not fooling him. Cortez gave an interview to El Vocero in which he says that he doesn't think Mayweather is retiring and that he will come back and open up the new MGM Arena. It must be tough being a genius, Joe Cortez.
Look, how many, I've been telling you that for how long? Because I've known for months, and rumor has it they've already reserved May 7th, and they have Floyd Mayweather's name on it. So, come on, people.
I mean, yeah, wake up, you know.
Tell us something we don't know.
Our favorite underrated Olympian, Dominic Brazil, heavyweight, former 2012 U.S. Olympian heavyweight, is going to fight Fred Cassie. On October 13th, Fred Cassie, if you remember, he's the one that fought Chris Areola on July 18th, and everybody and their mother thought Fred Cassie won that fight.
Yes.
And if Areola won that fight, he was going to go on to fight Deontay Wilder. Of course, that didn't happen. But it's good to see Cassie getting a big-name opponent in Brazil. Brazil, again, is not that good. I think this will be a good fight. I think this will be a very good fight.
And this will be a part of the Tuesday series.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's gonna be good, man. So we're looking forward to that. So that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. And as always, you can catch Robbie on Twitter at Ringside Robert, and I'm at Ringside 73. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.